It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, death diving and good-looking food.
The whole idea originated as you're playing chicken with the water.
So I was standing on the top of the of takeoff for like 40 minutes, ready to jump before I actually managed to jump because I was so scared.
I would say if Red Bull high diving is the UFC, death diving is the WWE.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. And if you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So I want to get right to our first guests. These are champion death divers, Asbjørg Nesje, who you'll hear first, and Johnny Nyberg. So just looking at this, like what is death diving?
Okay, so you're jumping from a height, a platform or a cliff or something like that into water. And in the air, you want to make it look like you're supposed to belly flop. And you want to hold the belly flop position as long as possible before you hit the water.
The whole idea originated as you're playing chicken with the water, right? So you take a big run up and then you want to as late as possible. That's really important to death diving is you want to close. We call it into a shrimp. You kind of punch the water with your hands and your feet at the same moment. And when you close like that, it doesn't really hurt. It feels the same as if you land on your feet.
What got you into it?
If you run off the cliff and you have like a lot of height, you get like this flying feeling. And I don't think you get the same kind of flying feeling if you jump feet first. I guess a lot of people do it for the adrenaline. I also do it for like the mastery, because you can imagine it being, it's scary. It's really scary. So for me, I guess it's the feeling of overcoming my fears and show to myself that I'm stronger than my fears, I guess.
Where I'm at now in the sport and within the community, I know a lot of the best cliff jumpers and death divers and high divers, right? High diving being like the pointed toes and proper form technique type of stuff like Red Bull does. And I think all of them give you about the same amount of adrenaline. I think it really breaks down to what your personality is like. Death diving, one of the judging criteria is actually based off of like how hype you can get the crowd on the platform and like how much attitude and swagger you have. I really enjoy the whole vibe of the competition, not just the actual jump.
It's more judged for the entertainment value than it is technique.
Absolutely. I would say if Red Bull high diving is the UFC, death diving is the WWE.
It seems like a little bit like you're supposed to make this difficult thing look like it's just nothing to you.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
I got this. I completely got this.
Already from when you're just standing on the top of the platform before you jump, you'll be like, just waving to everybody, chilling. You're not supposed to look bothered at all. Like, I could do this in my sleep every day. I'm not even scared. And on the inside of your body, you would be scared, but you're not supposed to show it to anyone because it's kind of a show sport, so it's part of the show. Just if you walk up to the platform and you look down and be like, okay, and you're tense and obviously scared, you don't get the same feeling like watching it. I'm chilling. I don't need to look at the water. I can lift my so I can look at the judges or at the audience, just kind of chilling in the air, having a lot of attitude. Maybe you can point at someone or throw them a kiss. Do something in the air just to show that you're in full control. I'm not afraid. I can just have a lot of steez.
The landing part of it, like, I could never quite tell watching some of the videos, like, how are you landing? Like, what? Because it's so quick at the end, I couldn't figure it out. Like, what are you trying to do?
There's three accepted ways to land a death dive in competition. The most common one, like I said, is called the shrimp, which you basically tuck your head down into your shoulders, you punch forward into the water, and you bring your legs up to try and touch your hands. So you try and close in half. If, you know, this is your hands, this is your feet,
yeah,
you try and hit the water like that. The second way is called the bullet or the crusher. It's almost the same thing, but you basically protect your head with your forearms, and you kind of land like this, and you kind of crush into the water. That hurts a little bit more. You'll sting your arms, but it's louder, and it gets a bigger splash, and those are two things in death diving competitions that the judges are looking for. And then the third landing, which is somewhat dangerous, and I really only ever do it in actual competitions, is the no-hander. It's where you put your hands behind your back and you just headbutt the water, put your head down into your knees.
And then you want to have a high splash as possible. And if you're going to have it like perfect, you get up to the surface quickly so you can get like the rain of your own splash in your own head. And if it hurts, because it might hurt, no one's supposed to know, not the judges or the audience. You'd be like, "Woo, that's exactly what I meant to do. It didn't hurt at all. That was awesome." And you swim in.
But this is not something that, like, we came up with. People have been landing like this for years. It's just we kind of made it competitive and put some rules to it.
Does that kind of hurt the spirit of it in any way?
That's actually a big kind of conversation within the community. Is there, obviously, if you want to be competitive, you have to have rules, because you can't just, you know, but if you have too many rules, it becomes high diving or freestyle diving with a funny landing, and then it takes away the spirit of the sport, which is, you know, the personality and the style you bring to it. So it's definitely kind of in the middle. Death diving needs to have some qualifications, but I think that oftentimes the judging is pretty subjective, which does lead to some controversy in competitions, because sometimes people just flat out disagree with the judges. But that's what I think makes the sport fun and entertaining, is you never know.
How popular is it?
I would say in the U.S. right now, if you ask the average person on the street, maybe 5 out of 10 of them would know what it is if you showed them a video. Because it's pretty popular on like TikTok and YouTube. People have seen it before. But I would say maybe 2 in 10 people would, from the get-go, if I just said, "Have you ever heard of death diving?" would go like, "Yes, I know what that is." Now, if you go over to Europe, especially in like Norway, every kid at your local pool is doing a death dive.
A lot of people do it in Norway. It's so funny, if you go down to just like a swimming place during summer, all the little kids, no one jumps or dive anymore. Everyone just death dives. So it's like a big thing here. Everyone knows what it is. Most people have tried it. And it's growing so fast.
I think death diving right now is kind of what skateboarding was in the 90s. It was kind of something that not that many people were really into, but if you were into it, it was pretty cool. And generally, when someone sees death diving, especially once it gets explained to them, where they're like, "Okay, this is done intentionally," people usually get pretty stoked on it. I very rarely find someone that just hates it for what it is.
Do you get the sense at all that people are watching it hoping that somebody fails?
I mean, I'm watching it hoping someone fails. There's never a death diving competition where someone doesn't wipe out. To people that are in the diving community, competition height for death diving is really low. It's between 10 and 13 meters usually, which is 35 to 40 feet. In the grand scheme of things, a lot of, you know, high dives are done from 89 feet. Freestyle cliff jumpers will do 100-foot jumps. So a death diving competition, even if you do wipe out, the worst that will happen is you'll have a really bad bruise, or you might get the wind knocked out of you. But it's very rare, if ever, that someone gets legitimately injured in a death diving competition, which I think is some of the fun of watching it, as you know that, like, wow, everybody's probably going to be sore tomorrow.
Does that hurt it from becoming a bigger thing, in the sense that, you know what, like, it's not that serious.
I think that death diving could find its place in popular culture by being more of a performance art than it is a competition. I think that if you did, you go to a big EDM music festival, you get a big old pool, paint up a bunch of death divers with neon paint, and let them jump off a platform while everyone's listening to some music, I think that would be the type of medium that would secure death diving as something that's a legitimate art form. Because I do agree with you that the ceiling for death diving as competitions go is only so high because of how subjective the judging is, combined with, it's kind of silly. Like, it's not that deep. And I love death diving. I want it to be the biggest thing on the planet. And I think that there's more potential than we've reached with death diving. I think it could get bigger, but I think you're delusional if you think death diving will ever be in the Olympics, or if it will ever be as big as snowboarding or skateboarding, just because, one, there's no product to sell, right? You can sell skateboards, you can sell snowboards. I guess you could sell swim trunks, but there's not really a product to sell. Two, it's really cool to watch, but it's like a circus thing, you know? And I'm not embarrassed to say that. I'm a competitor. So whatever activity I'm involved in, I'm going to do my best to win. But I think that if you're looking at Red Bull or Monster, the people that sponsor really big sports, they probably would see death diving as something that doesn't have as much potential as, you know, insert extreme sport here. I think it has enough potential to have an ecosystem of full-time athletes. I do think that there could be a good group of people that are full-time death divers. But I think in order to do that, there would need to be more events where death diving is incorporated. And I think that it would need to be more than just competition. I think death diving events would need to be, like I said, maybe there's people that death dive at festivals. It's the type of thing that maybe people aren't going to pay money to go specifically see a death diving competition. But I can guarantee you that any person that is walking by a death diving competition will stop and watch it.
Oh, yeah, I'd watch it. So put all humbleness aside. Are you the best in the world at it right now?
And it's hard to say because there's so many different things to be good at. You can have like jumping from heights or doing tricks or competition death diving. I would say, like, all humbleness aside, yeah, I would say I'm pretty clearly the best on the women's side. Right now, I won the last 3 world championships.
What do you think makes you good at it? Like, what's kind of... Why do you usually win the competitions you're in?
I have already a good like body control from my gymnastic days. But I think what makes me better than a lot of other people is that I'm really good at doing things despite the fact that I'm scared. I have like a pretty like logical way, I would say, of coping with fear. So I would just ask myself before I do a jump, like, are my surroundings safe? Like, is it deep enough and stuff like that? And then I would ask myself, if I'm not thinking about being scared at all, do I think I physically would be able to do this? Like, if I tried? And if I can say yes to both of those things, there's nothing but my head that can stop me. So no matter how scared I am, I've already decided that if I do it, I will manage it. And so there's no reason for me to chicken out. And I hate backing out. So I would, no matter how much I would hate life on top of that cliff, I would still do it because I know that if I walk out of here without doing it, when I know that I could have done it, I would not be able to let that go. Like, that would be hanging over me and I would not be happy with myself. So I think just my ability to do things when you kind of like, I'm scared at the top, I don't want to jump right now, but I know that I can, and I know that I would be happy when I'm at the bottom.
I understand what you mean in that kind of sense. Mm-hmm. Like, the fear of regret is more than the fear of failure.
Yes.
I'm more afraid not to do it than I am to do it.
Yes, I think I'm just really afraid of feeling like a coward. I hate that feeling.
Are you still scared, though, every time you do it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every time I'm like, not even on like really big heights, I would feel like, ooh, okay, I guess we're doing this now. But if it's from a height that I've done it from like a lot of time, like 10 meters, for example, it would be a bit scary, but I know that I am going to do this because I've done this countless times before. There's no reason for me not to do it. So I'm just going to do it, even though I'm feeling, oh, it's a bit scary. And that's fascinating because like every other thing, you when you practice, you get better. I realized that doing things despite of fear is actually something you can practice. So now I'm way better at doing something when I'm scared on the top of the cliff than I was like 4 years ago.
Are you ready for some harder / listener submitted questions?
Absolutely.
Does it hurt?
Sometimes. It can. It's like asking if playing football hurts. Sometimes.
What's the most common injury?
Bruises on your arms and legs. I think the most common serious injury is burst eardrums, but when I say common, I'm saying that happens to maybe 4 or 5 guys a year, and there's probably 10,000 people around the world that death dive.
Yeah, like when it's serious, that's what happens. Can you make a living on this?
I think you could if you move to Norway. That's probably the only country that has enough interest in the sport to make it full-time.
I am actually, like, I just started doing it full-time myself. There's not a lot of people doing this full-time, and it's hard, definitely. I don't think I would be able to do it full-time if it wasn't for social media. It's like a really social media-friendly sport, so I would say, like, I have some of my sponsors is from, like, the sport itself, but also most of my income is from social media, I guess.
But I think people know what you mean in that sense, right? And you make a living not just from prize money, but from clicks, so to speak. Highest you've gone from?
30.5 meters. It's 100 feet, exactly.
What was that like?
Oh, dude, I was so scared. Because I also had to jump. It was a spot with a lot of gap. That means I have to jump really far from my takeoff. So the takeoff is here and the water is like here. And underneath it's just rocks, which means I have to jump really far to get to the water. So I guess that was what was freaking me most out. I was standing on the top of the of takeoff for like 40 minutes, ready to jump before I actually managed to jump because I was so scared. And I was trying to hype myself up several times to be like, yeah, I'm going to jump now. I just couldn't make myself start the countdown. And I was in the air for such a long time. I had time to think for so long. And then the impact came and I was like, okay, here goes. I don't know what this is going to feel like. And it was totally fine. Like when I landed it, like all of my other like 20 plus meters has been less painful. It has been more painful, I mean. Because now I think it was so much adrenaline. I was so nervous. And I was like, wow, that was like nothing.
Do you think you could go higher?
I think so. I'm not going to go higher just to go higher. Like I'm not going to be like, I'm going to beat my record or something like that. But if I'm at a spot that is higher, I could tell from the impact of the 30 meter or the 100 footer that, oh yeah, I can definitely like take more impact. So if I'm at a spot and I'm feeling it, I'm stoked, I want to jump, I probably will. But it's not like I'm going to go looking for somewhere higher to jump just to do it, because I think that's when it starts to get scary, when people are trying to go higher just to go higher.
The only thing that like when you were trying to get yourself hyped up to do it, did you ever kind of run up to the cliff like, I'm going to jump, and then back out at the last second? Or did you, once you started going, did you go?
I always count down before I jump. It's kind of a trick, actually. It's really scary to do the jump itself. It's a little bit less scary to start a countdown. So if I'm really scared, I would start from 5. Sometimes I'll just start from 3. But if I start the countdown, it's easier just yelling 5 than actually jumping. But if I start the countdown is holy. Like I cannot back out on a countdown. So once I say 5 and everyone starts yelling 4, 3, 2, I know that I'm going to go on 1.
Easiest trick that looks hard, hardest trick that looks easy?
Okay. I actually love this question. I think that I have like a signature trick or a trick that I do really well that looks insane. And it's so easy. It's basically a late 360. I run off the platform. When I jump, I kind of turn my body sideways. I reach out and grab my legs. I hold it for a really long time. And I'm looking down at the water. At the last second, I'll flip my body around. So I'll do a twist and then impact. It looks crazy. It is so easy to do. Anyone can do it. But it always scores really well in competitions. I get great, great scores from that. And then the hardest trick that looks easy, I don't really know. I would probably say like a something with a stall in the middle. So basically you break the trick into two parts while you're in the air. You do the first half of the trick, then you stop your body, and then you do the second half of the trick. There's this guy from Norway who's won like 3 world championships. He's one of the best ever. His name's Kim. He looks great in the air, and he does this trick where he'll do one spin and kind of kick his legs out like this, and he stops his whole body for a second, and then he flicks his legs and spins again. It doesn't look like it would be that hard. I've tried it maybe 100 times. I've never been able to land it. So I'd say something with a stall, a 720 stall, would be something that's really hard but looks easy.
I can't think of any other sport that's more like based on showmanship, essentially.
Oh, definitely not. That's why death diving is so entertaining to watch.
Best place, let's keep this to the United States. Best place to do this at.
Okay, so a big thing with cliff jumping is not giving away the spots, because generally people will go and litter and spread trash everywhere and they won't clean up. So I won't say actual locations, but the best spot in the entirety of the United States to find cliffs at is in Northern California. It's just, there's so many, like Northern California, where you're at in Washington and Oregon, just because you're in that Pacific Northwest, you've got a mountain range, you've got tons of waterfalls, you have so many, like ravines and gorges, cliffs and things like that. And to everyone watching this, if you're going to go cliff jump, bring a trash bag. And even if you don't put any trash on the ground, pick up someone else's. We want to keep the cliffs clean so that people see cliff jumping as a good thing.
How deep does the water have to be to do it?
Okay, so for death diving, because basically your whole body hits the water as one piece of meat, one mass, right? You're not like, when you look at regular diving, they're tucked really tight, and they go 15, 20 feet deep. Death diving, if you jump off of, let's say, 10-meter platform, that's usually our baseline height, so 35 feet, you need maybe 8 feet if you know what you're doing, 10 feet if you're new. But it doesn't need to be that deep for death diving.
What's the holy grail of this? Like, what's the thing that the trick or the height or whatever that everybody's kind of like?
The holy grail for the average death diver would be winning the death diving world championship. That's like the pinnacle. And as far as winning that goes, the cool thing is tricks are developing every year. So generally, whatever the winning trick was last year is going to be out of style. So there is no holy grail in terms of like, there's a trick that everyone is trying to get to. Right now, because of how new death diving is, the holy grail is to come up with a trick no one else has done before. Because it's so new that you can do that pretty regularly. Like, most people in death diving who have done it competitively have at some point come up with a trick that no one else has ever done.
When do you start getting, like, at what height is like, all right, that's getting up there?
For me, I would say 20 meters, which is, again, like 66 feet, is kind of when it starts to go from, like, it could sting to you could get hurt. But generally, I would say to anyone that's thinking about trying this, learn it at 15 to 20 feet. Once you're comfortable with the technique, go up to 30 to 40 and stay there for like a year.
What's your worst injury?
I haven't really gotten a lot of injuries from death diving. My worst one is when I was actually trying to land on my feet. So that wasn't death diving at all. but I got like a heavy whiplash, and I've been struggling with my neck a lot for almost 3 years now. So that's been really bad, but that was not from death diving. That was from cliff jumping. So
this is
some
God.
Of the bruises I get. And
dude, what are you doing every day?
That's when I busted my eardrum. It's just me flopping a lot in every possible. Like, I've tried a lot of things.
Yeah, are you good at this? I mean, everybody's fail reel looks like this, right? Where you're wondering, like, man, you really go for it, though, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I usually try to send it.
Does that
it does
happen
not
every
happen
time?
Every time. No, definitely okay, not every time. Okay. That is from like when I flop, but I flop a lot, fail a lot. But it can happen if I have like a landing where I close just like not very much.
That's the 100-foot jump, huh?
Yeah, so you can tell like it's whoa. It's like a big gap that I have to jump out.
Wow, that's far.
And you can
that's
see the
really
next
high.
Clip isn't. Yeah, it's high. This is in like real time, so you can tell like I have a lot of air time.
Oh, I see what you mean about that left side, right? Like
yeah.
It's not close, but it's close.
But
at
it
the
feels,
same
and
time.
You're like following it yeah. down all the way, and it's like kind of like claustrophobic.
Yeah.
That was
cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can see that like that's you think about it, you're like, oh, it's 100 feet, 30 mm-hmm. meters. Then you see it and you're like, oh
mm-hmm.
that's a lot, that's pretty far.
Yeah.
That's pretty far. Wow.
It is. You could definitely land that one dry, I was gonna say.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of the end of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's pretty, like, that's impressive. How did you decide on that pose? Did you think about the pose for a little while? Like, what am I going to do?
That is, like, my, kind of, like, my signature pose, I guess. I just had to go for something that I knew I could do. And it was, like, I couldn't, like, try something new, some new pose or something. This is a competition in Utah. I actually won this competition, and it was, like, mixed class, so I was, like...
Oh, you beat everybody, huh?
Yeah, I was really proud of myself for winning that. You have usually 3 jumps, and one of them has to be classic, like the second jump I had there, and then the final jump is what counts. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and on YouTube. I do a lot of, like, longer videos on YouTube, too, or I'm gonna make more of them, at least, and... I post a lot of my jumps on both YouTube and Instagram. My name is really hard to remember, but it's Asbjørg_N. So yeah, it's the same on YouTube and on Instagram.
Cool.
So that's yeah.
Let's see. I know that last part's always awkward, but honestly, yeah. We take stuff and we put it in the episode description.
This is the original spot that me and my buddies built to practice. That tree has since fallen down, but this was one of the last times we got to jump it before it fell.
So you're trying to just pause as long as possible.
Yes. There's two types of death diving. Freestyle, which is what you're seeing here with spins and flips. And then there's classic, which no flips allowed, no spins. That's all about the attitude. So if you see someone doing something like that, we call it a freestyle death dive. And if you see someone doing like that, that's me, that's a classic death dive.
Is one kind of looked at being as more pure or more popular or whatever word you want to use than the other?
During competitions, they will have a round of freestyle and then a round of classic. So both of them are equally as important. The freestyle is more to show the athleticism, and the classic is more to show that you understand the basics of the attitude behind it.
So, okay, if you were to kind of put a number on it, you've got to prepare for the landing how many feet before you hit the water?
5 is probably when I start closing. The saying is you try and hit the water harder than it hits you. So I'm not fully closed until my hands are hitting the water. I'm not braced for impact. I'm actually trying to close as I hit.
But if you screw that timing up...
That's when it starts hurting. Is especially in competitions, the judges are looking to see if you close too early. So oftentimes in competitions, people opt to just not close at all or close, you know, 2 feet above the water and just take the pain. Because generally, if you close the right way, if you close late, the only thing that's going to get slapped are your shins. So we generally just take some leg slaps during competitions.
So you got to just be prepared for some pain.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. When you go into an actual death dive competition, just be ready to be sore the next day. That's part of the fun. Everyone knows that, like, okay, it's going to be rowdy.
I understand that. Like, there's something about, like, I like to go snowboarding, and if I come back not a little sore, I don't feel like I went snowboarding.
And it's not for everyone. I don't think that death diving has to be universally accepted, but I think that the people that want to get into it should have an outlet to explore it.
That's pretty much all the questions I have, man. Is there anything that you think we missed, or how can people kind of find out more?
I would say, so I actually just, this last Tuesday, released a documentary about death diving. It's on it's on YouTube. You can go, it's one of my main sponsors is a brand called Impossible. They're just like a holistic alternative to energy drinks. They have like healthy supplements that are good for energy, good for sleep. So if you go to, it's on YouTube, if you just look up Impossible Death Diving, it'll be the first thing that pops up. And it goes really in-depth into the process of death diving, from finding the spot to checking the water depth to making sure it's safe. It's more than just the cool clip. It's the full thing.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and on YouTube. I do a lot of like longer videos on YouTube too, or I'm going to make more of them at least. And I post a lot of my jumps on both YouTube and Instagram. My name is really hard to remember, but it's Asbjørg underscore N. So yeah, it's the same on YouTube and on Instagram.
I want to thank Johnny and Asbjørg so much for joining us. If you want to connect with them, we have linked to them on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included their information in the episode description. If you want to see some of what death diving really looks like, the YouTube version of this interview will be live on April 25th at 12:30 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Add a berry blast off for your day with the new Berry Pebbles. A berry twist on a classic breakfast. Perfect for giving those growing minds a blast of creativity. With the new Berry Way to Pebbles. Yabba dabba do you with Berry Pebbles. Head to postpebblescereal.com to learn more. Yabba dabba do and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements, copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
Okay. Now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. So are you going to tell the people?
I mean, I wasn't actually going to bring it up, but I can, I suppose.
Yeah, dude, of course. I want to hear all about it. I haven't gotten the details, nothing.
Simple answer is I tore the lowest muscle in your back. What's even worse about it was I was... Man, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask you about it, right? Let's get to the point where we find out how you did it.
Let me preface it with one thing. So here's what's the worst part about this whole situation. I've been going back to the gym after like 8 years of not going. I've dropped a little weight. I'm doing well. And I'm out in the yard getting it ready for my kid's birthday party. And I'm picking up dog shit. But I go to pick up the bucket with the poop in it. And that was it.
I feel like it's been enough days where I can now approach this as being funny. That may Absolutely. Not may not be the case for you. But so you tore a muscle in your back. How much dog poop was in the bucket?
It was a full bucket, but it wasn't like heavy at all. I mean, I had mowed the lawn before, but the front lawn before that, like I had helped my father-in-law was in town, which made it a little worse, but like I was helping him do a couple of things.
Oh, he thinks you're weak now. Now he thinks you're weak. Now he's looking at you like, this is the man that married my daughter? Tore his back, picking up 2.5 pounds of dog poop?
So probably the most uncomfortable part of all of this. So I get to the ER, you know, I go into the non-trauma bay or whatever of the ER, and a doctor comes right in. By the way, shout out to Beaumont Hospital here in Southeast Michigan. They were fantastic. I get on a gurney and the doctor comes in, and I'm facing the wall, so like I can't really see her, but my wife is there with me, which makes it even worse. And I look at my wife's face, and like she's kind of she's getting ghost faced, right? She's getting like, what is happening? And then I hear the doctor go, "All right, sir, I'm just going to give you a quick rectal exam to make sure that you can still, you know, that you haven't lost control of your butt muscles." Dude, I swear to God, from somebody that hasn't had fingers up his butt very often.
Oh, they went up the butt, huh?
No. I rolled over and I was like, I don't need that. I'm fine. So like I kind of pulled down my pants and I showed her I could like clench my ass cheeks. And then she goes, "Well, all right, roll over the other way. I want to make sure that the other part works too." Because at that point, they didn't know if it was a slipped disc or like maybe if I'd maybe even broken something. And I guess they were trying to see, but I was like, "No, the front and the back is fine. You do not need to touch anything."
First of all, that's hilarious. Second of all, just let the doctor do their job, man. You know how many fingers they probably had up? Like, think of how many times a doctor has put their fingers up somebody's butt. Like, they don't care, man.
Yeah, no. Well, guess what? This doctor, she didn't get to put her fingers up my butt that day. Maybe in the future, but not that day.
Eventually, everybody gets something up their butt. That's just how it's going to work. Whether for personal pleasure or medicinal purposes, you're going to have something up your butt at some point. Just get it over with and take it like a man.
The other thing that was kind of funny, but not really, was my wife was so empathetic throughout the whole thing, right? She's by my side. She knows how much pain I'm in. Once she realizes it's a torn muscle, all the feel sorry for you goes away.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, 100%.
I think I can quote her and say, "Well, I mean, I've given birth a couple of times. Like, you should be able to handle this."
Yeah, they are always playing that card.
So they roll me out of the hospital in a wheelchair, and it was not cold, but it wasn't warm, and I was wearing shorts and stuff. And I'm sitting there on the curb waiting for my wife to come pick me up, and she pulls like 20 feet away from me and then doesn't get out of the car, and I have to like waddle to the car. And now am I a dick for like thinking maybe she could have just pulled right up and I could have got right in?
I think you have a big issue at hand. I think you have a broader issue at hand right now. And that is that you've hurt yourself significantly. You had to be taken to the hospital. You couldn't walk for what seems like something that shouldn't have hurt you at all. And now all your family members think it's you're weak. She's testing you because this is going to determine whether or not you're going to stay married for the rest of your life. She is testing you, which she should be doing. Because right now, you look like somebody that's not fit to continue to care for children. If you're going to hurt yourself picking up 2.5 pounds of dog poop, quite frankly, if I was in a similar situation and my wife divorced me right afterwards, I would understand. Like, you're not signaling that you are evolution's finest.
I will say this. I did enough beating myself up, for sure.
I'm sure you've done that many times.
Yes. Well, you know, no one cares, but if you've ever torn a muscle, it's almost like if you fracture a bone, like you just want to break it that way, you know, like, cause the tear just sucks, man.
Toughen up, man. That's basically what it all comes down to is you're soft.
Well, trust me. Every time I looked my father-in-law in the eyes as he's, you know, doing things around the house.
Oh, and then he's going to be talking to your wife like, "Oh, so John hurt his back. Yeah. What was he doing? Oh, he's picking up. Didn't weigh that much." God, what are you going to do to reestablish dominance? What are you going to do to show your father-in-law and your wife and your children that you're not an embarrassment, that you are the man of the house, so to speak? Like, what are you going to do? You have to start doing feats of strength in the backyard.
I feel like I'm going to have to just take an axe to a random tree or find a squirrel and present it to my wife or something, you know, like something wildernessy.
Squirrel's not going to do it. It's got to be like a coyote. It's got to be bigger. Squirrel's not going to do it. You got to be It's got to be bigger.
We have deer. What if I come like riding through the neighborhood on a deer's back?
You need to have the deer hoisted on your own back. That's the only way. You need to kill a deer and then put it on your shoulders and walk into the house and then throw it down and then say, dinner's here. That's the only way to reestablish the fact that that's the only way. That's the only thing that you can do. You have no choice.
How long do I get to, how what's the window, the time window for me to do this before I lose
one
all credibility?
One month. Okay. Maybe end of this month, honestly, probably.
Oh, man. Well, we'll see. Maybe, I mean, trust me, that gave me enough painkillers and other medicine that maybe I can do that one night.
You're going to have to do something, man. You can't let this slide. You can't. Okay, I had another question, but I think this was just much better and more interesting. Here's my other question related to that. Where would you say on your body is the worst place to have a minorish but nagging injury?
I mean, the obvious answer after doing it now is my back, but say that I don't know that pain or that the back is negated for me. I will say small but annoying pain. You know, probably somewhere like in your foot. Or your toes?
Oh, I could see that a little bit. My answer would have been neck. I feel like if you got a little bit of thing in your neck or that shoulder area, that like that's going to bother you no matter what you do. I feel like you can get around a back injury if it's minor a little bit. But neck is like no matter what you do.
I feel like feet are just going to be, it's going to be nagging. Like it's just going to be bad.
Yeah, but you can just sit down. Neck, even sitting down, like you can't. My vote's for neck. I asked the audience. We'll see if we get any answers by the end of this. But let's move on. Let's.
All right, let's give some shout outs. Let's see. We'll start with Mitch Suzuki, Joseph Chedlek, Michael Hedge, Guy Seeley, Greg Tony, two first names there, Matthew Wiseman, Vontrell Johnson, JJ Harper, Dylan Congdon, Alex Washington, and we'll end here on, Mark Oliver. Sugar Bear 9105. What a handle.
I'm always slightly fascinated by whenever you have that kind of juxtaposition of a very normal name and then a name that sounds a very certain ethnicity, like Mitch Suzuki. Right? Like, my name is Bob Kawasaki. Like, those two things go together that well.
Got some local feedback that apparently people thought my segment last week with you was funny.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Profoundly pointless variation of, you know, marry, fuck, kill. Kept it the same this week. You know, can always change it next week if it gets stale. But this week, it's a little different. I went with all fictional.
How are you going to say I kept it the same and then immediately say you changed it?
It's a little variant. You'll just let me finish a sentence.
All right.
Okay. I went with all fictional characters.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
And the three options this week are you have to fight one of them, you have to share a hospital room with one of them where you cannot get out of the hospital bed.
Oh,
sorry. And the third is you have to give one of them a foot rub.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
So we'll start with probably the easiest pairing here. Gollum, Michael Myers, or Ed Cullen from Twilight?
I already forgot what the options are. What are the options again?
Fight one of them, share a hospital room, or give one of them a foot rub.
Well, I'm going to share a hospital room with Gollum because he's leaving. Right? If he can escape from Mordor in Lord of the Rings, he's not going to be in my hospital room for very long. So he's out. Edward Fair Cullen enough. Is the guy from Twilight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's a vampire. So you're going to lose that fight. I'll give Michael Myers a foot rub in the hopes that maybe, you know, he'll see the light. He could change. Because if I remember correctly, he's not like a bad guy, right? Like maybe he's just misunderstood. Everybody just wants to be heard. I think you could reach Michael.
You clearly have never seen the movies, which makes this
I've even never
better.
Seen it. I've never seen it at all, but I'm not going to fight a vampire. You're going to lose that 1,000%. There's no way you're beating a vampire. Michael Myers has lost several times.
I'd fight Edward Cullen. I don't know why, but he just looks like he has a punchable face.
Yeah, but he's a vampire. You're going to lose. Yeah. So yeah. I guess I would give the vampire a foot rub, and then I would fight Michael Myers. He's been beaten before. It can be done.
I mean, Buster Rhymes beat him, so you have a shot.
Man, Buster Rhymes is still going, right? Like, that's one of the best rap. That's one of the best Nick. That's one of the best artist names of all time. Buster Rhymes. What's he doing? I mean, like, what is he doing? Everybody knows exactly what Busta Rhymes is doing.
I just
Ludacris
love
could be
that,
anything.
That we are so old that people like, or artists like that are now going on tour and they sell out because we go and see them.
I wouldn't go see any artists from my youth. Like, why would I go see that? I don't understand that. To me, that's like, why would I go see somebody new? I would just like...
Nostalgic reasons.
It's just a reminder of how old you are. Like, let's go see the Rolling Stones. At what, the concert starts at 4 p.m.? That's true, though. They should start at 4 p.m.
Last call at like 6:45.
Right, like, listen, guys. We're starting right at 4. Right at 4. And they probably get angsty and start at 3:30.
The pre-band meeting's at like 11:45, right after breakfast.
Yeah, they want to do that. Man, they got things to do. Got doctor's appointments the next day. We got to get out of here. Okay. That's my choices.
All right. Second round here. Once again, it's fight one of them, share a hospital room, give one of them a foot rub. Bigfoot, Yoda, or James Bond?
Oh, I'd want to share a hospital room with James Bond. Because you're going to get some good stories and you don't know what's going to be coming in there, man. That's going to be entertainment. Like, something's going to be happening. You have a risk of significant collateral damage, but I'd still be like, right? I could go either way.
Okay. All right.
So, foot rub. Yoda, I feel like he deserves it.
So plus you're going to fight Bigfoot?
Oh, I'm not going to fight Yoda.
I mean.
He's going to crush you. Well, no, you fight Yoda, actually, because he's probably, like, he's too nice. And he'd probably just, like, use the Force and put you aside. Like, I don't think he's going to kill you. Bigfoot's going to rip your arms off. So I would give Bigfoot a foot rub.
Bigfoot ain't fucking around.
No. I have big feet, too.
All right, the last round here. Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games. Wonder Woman. Daenerys Targaryen.
Oh, man. Share a hospital room. I mean, all three are fine in all three. I'm fine with all three options for all three. Except for maybe Katniss Everdeen, I don't really have that much of a desire to give a foot rub to. I don't really have a desire to give a foot rub to anybody. We've done this on the top five. One of the things that I really don't like is having my feet touched or touching other people's feet. I just have no desire to do that. But all three are fine for all three. Because I'm losing to all three in a fight.
I don't know. I guess Daenerys Targaryen would have a dragon, so.
Yeah. Yeah, all three are fine for all three with me. That's I just roll the dice, and I'm okay with whatever the outcome is.
All right, well, that's
it. That was fast. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you crushed it, man. You killed it.
Succinct answers, right? Trying to keep it focused, because I know your back is going to collapse because you're a weak man.
What if that happened? What if I just fell off the chair?
Well, then did you cry? Did you cry at all? Even a little tear to yourself, even a frustration cry, like God dang it.
On the way to the hospital, yes, I probably did shed one or two, but I was just so uncomfortable sitting in the passenger seat.
You can't cry in front of your wife in the passenger seat, dude. Back seat, okay.
I mean, once again, it wasn't like a full on cry. You know, it might have been. Like one or two that rolled down the cheek. It wasn't like I was sobbing. I was in pain. I'm not afraid to shed a tear if I'm in pain.
I'm afraid to. I'm okay of crying emotionally, but I'm not going to cry physically. Not in front of my wife. You've got to redeem yourself. Well. You're going to. It's going to have to be an elk. Deer's not even going to cut it. You're going to have to kill an elk.
Well, we don't have any elk find one. Down this way.
Find one. Find one and make it happen.
Go to the zoo and just
kill the zoo. Right? Like, this is probably not the best. results of our poll, man, you got crushed. 100% of people are saying neck. 100% say neck. That's okay, crazy. All right. It's 100%. We'll see. We'll check in one more time before the end of the episode. I don't know. That's neck is a big pain in the ass. Back, you can, yeah, like I could agree with that because you can't like turn or anything. So anyway, but our top five is top five best looking foods. Not necessarily the best tasting, just that you look at and like, man, that looks good. What's your number five?
Like a good yogurt parfait.
Yogurt. Oh, is that what your number five is?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I love the way a yogurt parfait looks. They look delicious. Oh, good choice.
Yeah, that's... I thought about this list for a few minutes, and they always look good, especially if there's some fruit on them. This is so good. So, yes, yogurt parfaits.
Because it looks, like, healthy, like a lot of food, and it looks filling. Yogurt parfait, that's... Yeah, okay. Oh, that makes me question my top five, honestly, because you started strong.
Okay.
Lasagna. I think lasagna is the best looking Italian food. Like, it just looks good. If you see it from the sides, maybe not in the pan necessarily, but when it's on a plate and you can see all of it. Okay. That's when I think lasagna's like, oh, that looks good.
Ladies. All right. I mean, it's fine. It's a pretty average thing to me, but it's fine.
Okay.
So my number four, I went with salad specifically, but like a good looking salad, one that has like walnuts and cranberries in it, maybe some goat cheese, and it's just all done up nice. Like a good looking salad will make you think it's good. Even though it may not be.
I can understand that you can class up a salad, but I would never just be like, ooh, that salad looks good.
Oh, man. Or like if you're like at a restaurant, you're like, I mean, haven't you ever been perusing a menu and you're like, oh, that Cobb salad looks pretty good?
No.
No, well.
I have gotten a salad in order to kind of offset the other shame that I'm about to feel for the other things that I'm going to eat. But I've never looked at a salad and been like, yeah, give me that.
Yeah, I mean, a good-looking salad can be pretty good.
Fruit salad, maybe.
But, yeah.
My number... Man, there's just so many that I had a really hard time picking, honestly. So I tried to do a little bit different categories. My number four is any kind of stir-fried rice.
Okay, I mean, that's kind of like lasagna to me. Like, it's pretty easy to make it look good. And look, you know, I don't know. Just, I don't know.
I just like a lot of stuff that looks like a lot of stuff. There's a bunch of different things in there. It looks kind of healthy, but also like it's going to be really good. That's why I would put stir-fried rice as my number four. Any kind of thing like that.
So my number three, I want my top three are virtually interchangeable. We'll say that, but I had to rank them 3-1, obviously. So my number three, I went with sushi.
Okay. Sushi, definitely, yeah. There's some sushi that doesn't look great, but most sushi always is like, oh, yeah.
Oh, like, you start watering at the mouth, makes me want to go carry an elk home. Like,
ooh. Now, but wait, especially sushi with sauce on it. Sauce in that look, like the crust stuff.
Yeah, yep.
My number three is pizza, but it has to be the only reason I don't have pizza higher is it's got to be a thicker pizza. A thin pizza doesn't look appetizing to me. I mean, it does. But, like, it's got to be a little thickness to it. And then pizza, to me, is number three. Like, oh, yeah,
pizza. That's on my honorable mention, for sure. But, yeah, once again, just I feel like pizza always looks good. But I'm always like, oh, yeah, the pizza looks good. Never like, oh, I can't wait to dig into that thing. It just looks so beautiful.
You got to get, like, meatier pizza, man. Do you go thin crust, medium, thick?
I used to go deep dish, Detroit original, I think, along with Chicago. But
no, it's not, dude. Detroit does not get credit for every single thing in the world. You always try to talk up Detroit like it's done all this stuff. Nobody knows anything about Detroit food. I can't name you a single Detroit food. Like, oh yeah, I've heard about that.
I mean, that's fine. You know what I learned the other day, actually? A business that started in Seattle, Washington, that you would never have guessed it.
I don't know. It could be anything.
Dum, dum, dum. Red Robin. Yum.
Yeah, there's places in the United States that I would say are famous for certain kinds of foods, like Texas barbecue or New England clam chowder.
Or Detroit-style pizza.
Yeah, nobody's ever heard of that, right?
All right, well.
Denver-style pizza. Nope, nobody's ever heard of it.
Okay, I mean, listen, that's
step
fine,
up your
man.
Food game, Detroit.
Yes, all the city of Detroit. We're going to host the NFL draft the day after this episode comes out. We'll see what happens.
Ooh, the Lions are going to be good, too, aren't they?
Super Bowl favorites, I think, at least. I don't want to say that. I don't want to jinx anything, but, you know, they're definitely favorites.
Are they? Not the current champion? Not the current team? It's like, okay, see, this is what I mean about your unabashed love for Detroit. Even though you don't live there and you moved out and hurt your back.
and hurt my back.
If you were in Detroit proper, you would have been left to die like a man should be. You should have crawled. That's what you should have done. That was how you regained your manliness. I hurt my back, but I'm going to finish the job. And then crawl to the hospital.
Fair enough. Anyways, my number two, I went with like a good looking hamburger. Like sometimes a way a hamburger can be presented is is beautiful. Just a gorgeous.
Quick clarification question. Are you then cheeseburger's not your number one then, right?
No, I mean, my number two could be cheeseburger, hamburger. I mean, I guess cheeseburger is my number two then officially, because nobody eats a hamburger.
My son needs a hamburger and he's seven and I'm kind of like, you don't want cheese on that? Why would
he's
you?
An alien.
I don't understand. Whenever there's an option to add cheese, as long as it's not like a bodily issue, like you're lactose intolerant, then I would add cheese to anything. Is there anything you wouldn't put cheese on?
I mean, other than like the things that are so outrageous, but I mean, I'd put cheese on just about anything to at least try it. Sure.
Would you put cheese on sushi?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it wouldn't taste very good, but sure. I mean, well, no, wait a minute. There's cream cheese in some sushi.
Oh, there is cream cheese. I don't know if I would put like a slice of American on top of one, but I would have cheese with sushi.
Yeah, for sure.
Sushi? Every time I say it, it sounds like sushi. There's okay, anyway. My number two is a chili cheese dog.
See, I almost went hot dog on my list, and it's on my honorable mention.
That's the only thing to me is, and I could expand chili cheese dog to also include like any kind of covered dog. Anything with like extra stuff on a hot dog looks amazing to me.
It does, man. See, that's why there's so many. I mean, just a regular hot dog with it sweating a little bit and the bun, even that's kind of sexy.
You want to do some hot meat jokes?
No. So my number one, speaking of meat, I put like a nice piece of meat, like a steak or something like that. But yeah, so my number one overall is just meat.
I have started watching like cooking shows. Not cooking shows, but like you can go on YouTube and you can find like a Japanese chef preparing like Wagyu beef or whatever it is. And like, oh, that does look pretty good. Yeah, okay. My number one is a cheeseburger. I don't think anything looks better than a cheeseburger. Like that just looks so good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I mean, it was my number two for a reason. I mean, it's all in the way it's presented, right? But I feel like we don't take time to really care about the way our food looks sometimes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What's on your honorable mention?
So, like I said, the main two that I'll bring up are pizza and hot dogs. I mean, those I wanted to put them on the list, but I just didn't.
Okay. I've got nachos, waffles. I think waffles look great. Probably the best looking breakfast food. Eggs can look really good, but waffles, I think, are the one that are better looking as a breakfast food. I can put bacon up there. Mac and cheese.
Those are, but they're just all like kind of plain foods, I guess, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
Ooh. Okay. All right. I guess we're going to take that shot. I'm glad you hurt your back. Oh, okay. That's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a quick review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. And let us know what you think are some of the best looking foods. Man, just think, I mean, a cheeseburger. That's hard to beat. Even like a junky cheeseburger is still good looking.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.